Cine Marathon, the movie marathons podcast where we watch movie marathons all in one day and talk about them later. This time we are concluding the Bond Marathon. This is part 5. If you missed parts 1, 2, 3, or 4, go back and check those out. But if you've heard them all, then sit back and enjoy the final installment of the James Bond Cine Marathon.
So, Pat O'Reilly is dead, unfortunately.
To us, anyway, because he hates...
A shark bit his leg off.
Yeah.
You can read about it in the newspaper tomorrow.
Sadly, we had to say goodbye to Pat, but we are going to soldier on.
Because we only have Pat here, though.
Yeah.
Like any marathon, just like this podcast, is almost like a marathon in and of itself.
Yeah.
Sometimes you lose people along the way. But we're going to continue on. We only have a few more to go, and we're coming up on The World Is Not Enough.
The world is not
did not age well for me within this marathon.
Really, the movie's not enough to be a Bond movie.
It sucks because they used the Bond family crest like as a movie title, which I think is awesome that they
used
that.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That's great. It's just that if you're going to use such an awesome title, make the movie good. Mm-hmm. The World Is Not Enough, definitely, yeah. It didn't age well. It didn't hold up to the awesomeness that is its name. It just was a disappointment. Wasn't good.
The only genuinely cool plot element is the Bond girl villain who like was a good person at first, was kidnapped, and then she's got like serious Stockholm syndrome where she's in a relationship with the villain but you don't know it. Like, she's doing all this really twisted stuff.
Well, it's worth mentioning the villain, like, could have been cool. Like,
he's actually a really great setup for
like
a villain.
Like, on paper, it's Robert Carlyle as a villain. And on paper, he sounds, like, cool. He's got, like, a bullet in his head.
He feels no pain.
So he's, like, Darkman.
He's
like,
Darkman, the bad guy.
Yeah, and the bullet's killing him. Like, he's going to die as a result of
this. So he's this, like, nihilist that just wants to, like, destroy the world or something.
Yeah, it's a great...
Should be cool.
Yeah, it should be awesome, but it just ends up falling completely flat.
Well, and he's in the movie for all of, like, 10 minutes? Like, he's, like, barely in the movie.
Aren't his, like, senses, like, heightened or something?
I believe he gets accelerated strength, much like Darkman, because the nervous system is making up for not feeling it.
That's like adrenaline.
Somehow, giving him more adrenaline.
Yeah.
Like, it opens up pretty strong with, like, you know, the bomb going off in the building. And then
he chases like an agent in a boat and stuff. That was good.
No, see, I completely disagree because it's MI6 headquarters, and how the shit is MI6 gonna let that happen to their headquarters? And secondly, it's their headquarters. How are you gonna let this woman get away from, I don't know if I've mentioned it yet, your headquarters? And
Bond did not let her get away.
You
he
have
chased her all
one agent chasing this woman. One
Bond
agent
was just on it.
He
man.
Took the speedboat.
He was ahead of all the other agents.
Which is a notable part of this movie. That speedboat is the shit.
It's pretty good.
Q basically is making this little speedboat for like a personal project of his for when he goes to the lake or something.
But I was making this for your opening movie, Chase. Here you go.
Wait, is this the movie where like Q was like kind of loopy? Is this where he like loses it? He has like the person in the wheelchair with the rocket? Rocket
Cat? No, that was Goldeneye.
That was Goldeneye.
This is his last appearance.
Yeah.
Well, his exit was awesome. I don't remember off the top of my head right now.
Yeah. No. It's worth noting. It's Q's last movie. We watched this dude for like 2 days.
Yeah.
From like a sort of middle-aged kind of younger guy to this really old guy, and he has like the saddest. He basically introduces John Cleese as like the next guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he says to Bond, like, hey, well, you know, it's like, I'm retiring. And Bond's like, well, really? What are you doing? And then he's like, always have an exit plan or something.
He says, remember two things. Never let him see you bleed and always have an exit plan.
Yeah.
And then he just,
like,
dips into the ground.
Yeah.
He dies, like, between this movie and the next one, right? Like,
yeah.
It kind of gives me the impression that, like, he had some kind of cancer or something, and the screenwriters or somebody, like, had to have known that, like, he wasn't
They knew
going.
By looking at him.
They were like,
there wasn't much
he
left.
Was, like, I think he had been in failing health, and they it was movie to movie at that point whether or not he would be able to continue, and it got to the point where they decided, you know, you've been around as long as you could possibly be, and we care about you, but it's time to pass the torch.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, he was in his, like, at least in his late 40s when he was in From Russia with Love. I mean, he was Salt and Pepper Hair in that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is 40 years later that he's still doing it. It's a lot like Michael Goh in Batman.
Yeah.
Like, they kept pulling him back to be Alfred, but he was just getting older and older. And, like, I mean, he's, you know, he went on to do things later, but he was just like, he's like, you need to... This guy needs to go.
Like, he's got to have some kind of record as, like, the same character
longest
in the most
recurring
movies.
Character.
Like, he has to be, right?
Well,
like,
yeah. I mean, I would think that because no other character in a movie.
There's not a franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it could have been a more fitting or more respected way for Q to go out. Like,
I agree.
As sad as it was true to the character. It was true to the spirit of, like, what it means to watch Bond movies and, like, care about Q. I think it was great.
Yeah, it was sensitive enough to that it was memorable, but it was still, like, Bondish enough to, like, not really spend too much time on it and not really, you know, make it too big of a plot point. It was just like, here's my replacement, remember this, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And... yeah, I mean, it was good. Like, I liked it, but it was sad to see him go.
I think he actually just read the script to Die Another Day and then just fucking keeled over. Yeah, it's like, I am not
And he gives him, like, the worst gadgets. Like, the inflatable ball. Like, the ball envelope.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the one that saves his life? That
it's like
one?
A gerbil ball, right?
Yeah, like, it's like the whole setup of, like, he meets the girl and go, hey, let's go skiing. Oh, okay. Oh, no, an avalanche. Use the inflatable ball. It's like, that was, like, it wasn't a gadget that was
practical.
Yeah.
It definitely seemed, that was a gadget that definitely seemed like, no, it'd be cool as if we had an inflatable ball. Yeah. Like, okay, maybe, if you can work it into the script, and then, like, the guy leans terrible. Over to his partner, he's never gonna work that into the script. And then, like, and then they
like
work
a
it into,
dare.
Yeah, and then they work it into the script, and they're like, well, damn it.
There's so many things about this movie. You know, we got Denise Richards.
Oh, yeah, well, I can't believe we haven't
mentioned her Christmas Jones, was that her name?
She was terrible. Yeah. Terrible.
There was the bomb defusal in the pipeline.
Is that the one where they're on their, like, the sleigh?
Yeah, like the rocket sled in the pipeline. Oh my god, this movie is...
Totally.
This movie is just terrible.
Denise Richards is, I think, of all the Bond girls, she's the one that they introduced, like, oh, here's a scientist. And everyone's like, yeah, fucking right.
Yeah, they're bullshit.
Even for a Bond movie, everyone's like, no way. Like, it's just
like,
so
science
stupid.
Of what? Like, look at this woman. Yeah.
Didn't she use, like, the same word, like, 8 million times in this movie?
Which was dur.
Dur?
No, there was, like, a scientific term that she wouldn't shut up about. It was, like, polarity or something like that. And and it was, like, the only word they could think for her to keep using to make her sound smart. I mean, she was an attractive lady at one point, but she just could not act to save her life.
Yeah, this was before she got less attractive. She was a champ in this. Unfortunately, no matter how much of a champ she was, she could not act. And the reason that her name was Christmas Jones, like, what the fuck was that all about?
Like, just for the joke?
Yeah.
Christmas
came
earlier.
It's a good joke.
Or what's he say? Christmas comes... I thought
Christmas only came once a year.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
That's good. That's real good.
Oh, that's gross.
Not as good as Jack Frost, the horror movie where he rapes the girl and then says, looks like Christmas came early this year.
Oh,
I think
really?
That one's way Touché. Better.
That one is way better.
That was before...
he won a Bond.
Yeah, it's true.
Didn't that Jack Frost movie come out before this one?
Yeah, it definitely did.
So they stole the joke anyway.
Yeah,
probably.
Well, so much shit has been stolen from Bond. I think the Bond franchise can steal one from someone else for once.
Well, it's so sad to, like, this is the same series of movies with Pierce Brosnan. Like, we had GoldenEye, which is so good.
Yeah.
this movie's so just blah and like phoned in.
Polar opposites.
Yeah, and then like I really don't remember what the villain's plot was. I know it had something to do with a submarine.
Yeah.
And overloading a nuclear reactor.
It had something to do with something I had absolutely no interest
in. He died kind of fucked up, right? Like they
like they launched like a steel pipe or something. Yeah.
That was kind of okay. That's kind of how I felt watching the movie.
The whole movie was just it's kind of okay, whatever.
But honestly, as bad as that was, I would watch The World Is Not Enough 10 times. So many more times than Die Another Day. Like, Die Another Day.
Sure.
I would watch
so bad.
To wrap up the Brosnan series, like, that's just sad because he was such an awesome Bond, and, like, that's how you're going to finish
Aside from the Casino Royale comedy movie, which we all agree was horrible. I mean, that almost doesn't really count because it's not really a Bond movie. Of all the movies we watched, Die Another Day was my number one worst Bond.
Yeah, it's my bottom of my list.
Yeah, the Brosnan series just like starts really strong and it's just a gradual downhill.
Yes.
Like, it's like, I don't know if there's a word for like the opposite of an orgasm, but like that's what the movie was. It's like the most.
It's called circumcision.
It's called
I think vomiting.
It's a degasm.
Vomiting would be
just
it.
It's an anti-gasm of movie watching. Yeah, it's horrible.
I've heard people who I've discussed this movie with, I won't name names, they defend it on the sense that it's like a Bond throwback to all these little elements of Bond. You know, you see all the old props.
Right, they have the old gadgets.
Halle Berry's wearing the Honey's bikini. There's the complete rip-off of the plot of Diamonds Are Forever, you know, stealing diamonds to build a diamond satellite that shoots a laser beam.
Freaking laser beam.
Yeah.
But you know what would have been really sweet to add to all that? Rendered CGI
effects. Yes. That would be nice.
It looks like garbage.
It wasn't... Like Hackers was... Like, you know what? Actually, I'm going back even further from the 80s. What was that talking head guy's name?
Max Headroom
had more pixels than most of the sequences in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, and
The intro to Bill Nye the Science Guy was like District 9 compared to this.
Anyone remember Reboot?
Yeah.
I remember.
But, I mean, this movie had a fairly significant budget. And we're sort of... I mean, granted... This movie is not at the peak of CGI effects yet, but it...
To say the least.
But it could have afforded better CGI effects than it did.
Well, Lord of the Rings had come out at this time, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, CGI was pretty damn decent.
Yeah, but they had been developing the Lord of the Rings technically since about 1997.
But the technology was there.
Yeah, the technology,
was there, but it's time.
In Lord of the Rings, like, they're smart in that they only use effects like that when, like, necessary.
Isn't there a scene where he's, like, windsurfing down a tsunami?
Yeah, he like, takes, like, part of his plane or something and, like...
It's the car. It's the speed car that had broken, like, the... The land speed record.
Oh yeah!
Oh yeah!
Movie.
Yeah!
Yeah!
Oh, and then
he took the parachute.
Remember Halle Berry
down.
Jumping off the side of that building?
Yeah.
Like this is the same series that like fucking GoldenEye. Like he goes to a dam and just jumps off a dam.
Yeah.
It looks amazing.
Yeah.
They have this... Never Say Never Again. They threw a horse off a cliff.
Yeah.
Like how
Halle Berry has this goofy ass. Like we see a close up and like obviously Halle Berry didn't jump off a building.
Yeah.
So like they have the worst like morphed like just shit looking thing like, and I guess I was supposed to be like, oh my god, she jumped, but it would have been so much more amazing if she like jumped off like a low angle shot and then cut to like a double.
Because no, it would have been much
better.
It would have been better if like they just kept that angle and then like she winks at him and makes that stupid fucking face or whatever. And then like you just put like the camera like over Bond's shoulder and she just falls backwards onto like a mat or something.
Yeah,
like that would have looked like substantially better than whatever bullshit CGI cinematography.
The camera like stays at her relative to her.
Yeah.
So as she falls backwards, her orientation to the camera never changes. The background just kind of swings around, but it's not a real background. It's all fake.
Yeah.
It's all really fake.
Just this whole movie, it's really actually an enigma for a movie that had so much money and so many resources, and I'm assuming a significant amount of time to complete effects. It It failed on every level.
Well, and the plot is a fucking mess.
Yeah.
Because, like, at the beginning of the movie, he's in North Korea, he gets captured, and then the whole...
he's in the prison!
He's in prison! Oh, we forgot about the him. Prison has, like, no bearing on the plot. Like, it's like, oh my god, Bond's captured for the credits.
Yeah.
And then he just gets out.
It does have
well,
some
it
bearing.
Does, yeah. Cause
no, no. I know it has bearing, like the dudes he met in North Korea factor into the rest of the movie.
The amount of time that he was in prison was, as far as a plot device, was so that the Korean son who we thought died could get the face-altering surgery.
Yeah, genetic-altering surgery.
Yeah, so that he wouldn't actually be the same person at all.
Right.
And he can't sleep, so he has to use the dream machine. Yeah. Which is never explained, which I guess is a good thing. It's just this rainbow helmet that he wears. And apparently it allows him to dream. Right.
It's a precursor to Inception, and we all have to admit it.
Just because that was a terrible nightmare.
Yeah.
But to me, if you're going to make the decision to, like, put Bond in the slammer for, like, a year or two or ten, or however long he was in there.
It was a year and a half.
Like, I understand why it's there for the North Korean guy and stuff, but, like, Bond gets out, gets a haircut, and in terms of his character, is in no way has any sort of arc.
Yeah, has no sort of emotional change. Bearing
like,
on
to
what
me, it would be
through.
So obvious to, like, have him have some sort of, like, emotional scarring or, like, flashbacks or...
And he stops his heart?
Yeah, right.
Like, to fool the nurses? God.
That's the extent of his emotional scarring, just to escape the...
Yeah.
Hospitalization, so he can go out on his own.
Like, as soon as he's out, it does not matter.
I think one of us mentioned during the marathon that maybe, like, they utilized that, like, in him looking like Scruffy Bond, because it was the same year that TV movie Robinson Crusoe came out.
Yeah.
Starring Pierce Brosnan.
So he had to do it.
He just had to keep the hair, and they're like, well, let's write it in. And
yeah, that was a bad
the
movie.
Bad guy in this movie, the Korean guy that gets, like, genetically altered and becomes Gustav Graves, the playboy, he was, like, straight up annoying.
Yeah. He had, like, those creepy blue eyes.
Yeah, lots of smiles, and so, like, over the top and fucking obnoxious.
That, like, and they had that stupid, sword fight.
With Madonna there.
Fucking Madonna, who... Also, the worst song. Bond song.
Yeah, worst Bond.
Holy shit, this song is annoying.
The, like, remix Bond, like, it's so bad.
The visuals of the opening sequence, I thought were pretty cool.
Like,
definitely.
It's a great idea. The theory is great.
Because, like, Bond's being tortured and, like, with, like, ice and coals, and there's these figures of the nude women as the ice and coal caressing him and pushing him, and it's like, wow, that's pretty intense.
And the electricity women dancing and sparking from their arms.
But by the end of the movie, the bad guy's in, like, a fucking, like, Iron Man, like, power suit. Like, what?
It's powered by diamonds, though, isn't it, too?
Yeah, it's like everything's powered by diamonds.
Which is dumb.
Doesn't the bad guy have, like, a brother or something whose, like, face is, like,
he's got
diamonds in
his face? Cause
it's just his cohort.
The diamonds blew up and, like, embedded into
his because there's no way to pop those out.
Yeah, because the blood vessels have been coming.
Bullets
infused.
You can get out. Diamonds are there just forever.
Forever, yeah.
Actually, though, I think it was an option to leave them in.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had diamonds in my face, I'd be like, I'd keep them.
But the whole purpose of designing the satellite with the laser beam was only to blow up all the mines between North and South Korea.
That's right.
So this guy could lead his army into South Korea take back South Korea.
Yeah.
That was it.
And win over his father's
affection. Why is he parachuting into his knighting? Like, London? Like,
it's like...
Oh!
this whole movie was just about getting South Korea back. Yeah. It was just like...
Dude.
It was such a simple plot, and it could
and
be a great plot.
And they had the diamonds, right? Like, what? Yeah. What was the problem?
This manufacturing fake diamonds for it, yeah.
This movie is seriously, like, this whole discussion about this movie has just me been trying to resurrect memories that I intentionally blocked out.
Yeah.
This movie was terrible. The ice car chase, like, with the invisible Aston Martin or Jaguar or whatever the hell
it was the Vanquish.
That shit was like I thought it would be cool and I was hoping it would be cool, but that was, like, underwhelming to say the least. Like, that whole car was underwhelming.
Well, let's
was
not forget
dumb.
The entire ice palace that's like melting.
Oh my god,
and, like,
what a nightmare.
What the fuck? Like,
why were they there? Yeah, why were they even there? Like, what does that do for anybody?
Do you think his dad was like, we're all ready to invade South Korea? And he's like, well, we just broke ground on the Ice Palace. What, put those resources into it? You would have, like, conquered, like, 10 times over.
Had to become John.
And Superman was just, like, pissed because, like, he doesn't have any neighbors in, like, forever. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, oh, these people moved in next door.
Don't shut up!
I mean, the only thing I can think of in the movie that's at all a positive is sort of like Halle Berry's character
is so hot.
Is she? Well, she's incredibly attractive.
She's fun to look at.
Incredibly attractive.
Was she the first lead Black Bond girl?
No, and Live and Let Die had the agent girl.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Sorry.
Certainly, well, the most screen time.
Actually, yeah, I'm going to correct myself. The first mulatto Bond girl representing my people.
You are being specific.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
But like, creamy. Not that they pull this off in the movie, but I can see what they're going for. Like, I guess there's been other spies and agents that have worked with Bond, but she really almost feels kind of like an equal to him in the movie.
They were really trying to make an equal.
Yeah, like, there's tension.
They wanted like a spinoff, right? Like they wanted her to have her own movie, which I would not
Catwoman.
Liked.
Yeah. Right. Bond Catwoman.
But I like that she's sort of one, like she's right in there in the action with him and all that. Like that's the only thing I can think of that's like that's not that bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So was Wei Lin in the previous movies. Yeah. So you can't really.
Yeah, but I think not in terms of her abilities, more in terms of her like presence and screen time.
I don't know.
Movie.
I think
like,
Yo was like that.
Better, I think what I mean is like too. The one sheet of the movie is like Bond and her with guns out together. Like the
guns
marketing of this movie is
that's
like
true.
Jinx equals Bond. Like she's
that's
on the
female absolutely. Bond. Yeah.
She's not like some subservient girl. Bond, like she is like equal to him in every way.
Yeah.
Which is like that's good.
Yeah,
too bad the movie was fucking horrible.
Yeah.
I used to like this movie a lot. In fact, I was about...
No, I'm sorry. I don't mean to like...
No, wait.
No, he's a critic.
Used to.
Okay.
I used to, and it aged the worst of all these for me.
It's not even that old. How many years old?
Yeah, it came out in 2002. It's only 8 years old. It's the one that I saw the most in theaters. I must have wound up seeing it maybe 6 times in theaters.
Wow.
And
wow. I don't know how you.
So it was like Phantom Menace for you, basically.
Yeah. Yes. Like, yeah. It was. And
you were in that.
I didn't know any better at the time.
This is good.
Yeah. Exactly. I think this is.
Yeah.
Wizard Man.
This is bright and flashy and it's entertaining and it was at the time. But the new ones came out and then I saw more of the older ones, which taught me a really great lesson about how to really make eye-popping entertainment.
And a good Bond movie.
And a good Bond movie. Yes, yeah. So
I think this movie is a huge testament to how important and how, like, going to movies and the whole idea of movie magic, that practical effects will and always will be better than CGI.
Definitely.
And even though this is a particularly poor use of CGI, like Jurassic Park used CGI and it looked better than this. Yeah. That was like almost a decade prior.
Exactly.
Like, but that practical effects always will excite an audience more. I don't know. It just doesn't age well because it just wasn't utilizing effects in a way that works.
One last thing about Die Another Day. It just didn't let up on the shit. because this is a constant stream.
It
gave you just enough to catch your breath, and then it was like, nope, here's some more.
You are gonna finish this whole plate.
I will not eat cat poop.
It ends with Bond getting the girl, which I'm cool with. That's typical Bond.
Yeah.
But they're making love on a pile of diamonds. Like, firstly, if carpet fucks your shit up, how the hell is diamond supposed to be comfortable?
Yeah.
Well, diamonds are the most soft and malleable substance on the earth. I don't know what you're talking about.
Anything can cut
it's
a
like
diamond.
A waterbed.
They're laying in her belly button and they're playing around.
Yeah, and they're
with
like
them.
Playing with them, running them through their fingers. It's like really like we get it. You have a bunch of fucking diamonds. Like you're gonna bone in them?
That's
like
that's just irresponsible. They probably lost one or two.
Yeah. I feel like getting sand caught in crevices of your body are painful.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, how narcissistic is that? Like, yeah. What the fuck on diamonds?
Like, who does he think he is? Fucking Diddy? Like, what's he doing? Like, oh, God.
Oh, man. I do have to give a special shout-out to my friend Stu Chait, who showed up in, like, the nick a fucking time. Like, he showed up right at the end of World Is Not Enough and was with us there for all of Die Another Day.
Oh, that was Stu?
Yeah, which I think if we didn't have a new human being...
Yeah, he was fun there.
Yes. ...to meet and talk to... At this point, we're getting on, like, 40-plus hours.
Yes, and
he would have all committed suicide, I think, if we didn't have, like, a new person.
And I think he brought Red Bull.
Oh, he did. No, he was a champ.
Energy drinks.
Save the day.
Stu, thank you.
And now that we're also thanking, we should thank your friend that brought all the pizza.
Our friend Josh Peterson.
Yeah, Josh Peterson.
He showed up when he could. He brought us food. He brought us morale. Yeah.
Thank you, Josh.
Josh was a big part of helping us get through this.
Oh, and thanks to Liz Teal for the cheese sticks. We appreciate it.
Yeah, cheese sticks.
Those were nice. Arm yourself because no one loves you. We'll save you. It'll always kill you. Are you willing to die? The coldest blood runs through my veins. You know my name. Well, that brings us... We're almost done. We only have two more movies to go. And the next one is Casino Royale.
Woo!
Rocking Train.
2006. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, Pat's not here to just wail away on it.
Yeah. Which is good.
Great, because it doesn't deserve
it. Because you don't want to hear that shit. Because you know, like we know, that it's fucking awesome.
It's a bold move, but it's pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it's... I've noticed that I'm fairly fickle with Daniel Craig. Like, immediately my gut reaction was, like, after watching all of these Bond movies, I was like, wow, this is not Bond. This isn't Bond at all. Like, before watching him, I was like, yeah, Daniel Craig's, like, my second favorite Bond. He's awesome. And then I watched them all, and I saw Craig, and I was like, you know what? He's just not a Bond. This doesn't work. I'm kind of fighting myself about this, because it's like, on one hand, you've got, he's not the typical Bond. He's completely different from literally every Bond. Like, the characteristics that every Bond has shared in the past, Craig just doesn't have. Like, he's not, like, he's the first Bond that you see bleed. He's the first Bond that you see get messy, really, and he's just not polished. He's not, he hasn't completely honed his skill, but at the same time, he's still a badass. So, I mean, I think that's the most controversial issue as far as Daniel Craig as a character.
I agree. I think everything you're saying is true. I just think that I wouldn't give it credit if I didn't feel or didn't know that that was the whole point behind his new representation of Bond. I think if Pat were here, Pat O'Reilly were here, he would say that is a detriment to what it means to be James Bond. But I think why I give it a pass and why I say this is okay, this is part of canon, is because it's leading to him becoming what we know as Bond. This is like a preface. This is saying this is where he starts. This is, we're going to see him evolve and grow into what we know Bond should be. And I think that's an awesome intro to
it. It's exciting potential.
Absolutely. But at the same time, you can't dedicate a movie and a half to him. How do you know that he's not going to be like a Lazenby? Like, at the time, you don't know he's going to be a Lazenby, or you don't know he's going to be a Dalton.
My take on Casino Royale. It's actually, I'm a huge Bond fan. We all come from different sort of levels of Bond. But coming into this marathon, like, my father showed me all these old Bond movies. I've been a Bond fan as long as I can remember. I've always loved Bond. And when I went and saw Casino Royale, breath of fresh air doesn't even begin to describe how great Casino Royale was for me. Like, my whole attitude is, I know there's this classic Bond that everyone needs to be like that. But really, like, we've had, like, fucking years and years and years and years of, like, normal classic Bond. And to me, it was, like, so exactly what the series needed to sort of have a fresh start and a new thing. It's like...
You can't really get much fresher,
basically. Jesus Christ, like, we watch, like, 50 hours of Bond movies. It's not like the world is lacking classic Bond movies. If you want a classic Bond movie, like, pick one. There's, like, 20 of them.
That's true, yeah.
So it's, like, in my mind, I don't fault it in any way for that. And like Matthew said, it's very intentionally against type.
Right.
The entire movie is manufactured to play against your expectations what you think Bond is. Mm-hmm. Like, I love, like, at the beginning of the movie, he's going up an elevator, and it counts down up from, like, 1 to... And it stops at, like, 6... Like, it doesn't even get to 7.
Yeah.
So, like, there's all these things in the movie where you're like, oh, it's going to go to 7, 007, here we go. Like, doesn't even get there. Every time he's ordering drinks, he never says any of the, like, the lines. He's never, like, vodka martini.
Yeah.
He makes up this, like, ridiculous, like, bullshit,
like lemon
spice. Yeah, with a twist and da-da-da-da-da, and I'm going to call that like a Vesper and stuff. But I think they really get away with it because, I mean, I know it's cliche now to have all these reboots and stuff, but really, like, if anything needed a reset button, Bond, like, definitely did.
Well, especially after Die Another Day.
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
Yeah,
that's true. I can see that.
They reined it in. Right?
But would you be as inclined to be okay with the reboot if you felt that the series was going to continue to be exactly like that, always going to six and always, you know what I mean? Like, but you have a feeling that it's leading to something.
I think the reason it's okay with me is because it's an adaptation of Casino Royale,
the book,
which is a real Bond novel. It's like finally the first Bond book that's never been made into a movie aside from the like atrocity
and
that
the
we saw
one.
And the climax thing. Yeah. Like, it's never been done.
Yeah.
And so in a weird way, even though it's against type, and it doesn't feel like he's quite exactly Bond. In another weird way, the movie is almost like totally
super,
it feels like an old Bond movie.
Any of us know how true this movie is to the source material?
Yeah.
Like, is Bond sort of the upcoming, like, not quite there agent in the book?
I'm assuming he should be because it's early.
In the book, he does receive his 00 status in the book. Like, it's his first thing. They establish that it's not like he's been a 00 agent forever and this is just yet another story. I mean, that's sort of how we're introduced to him in Dr. No.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, here's one of his adventures, and he's been on many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But Casino Royale is in the book, like, it's his first, like, big outing. Mm-hmm. It's his first time having License to Kill.
And really, like, they even mentioned, as far as the movie, that M didn't want him to be on this mission.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason that he is on this mission, it was because it was the high-stake poker game, and he's the best poker player that they have in the agency.
Yeah. Which, that is one of the big changes. It is Baccarat in
the
book,
series,
as we've seen. But, like, I think they very wisely sort of adapt it.
The times are different.
Especially since you're going to have a game that's so much of the stakes of the movies based around the tension. And it's like,
Baccarat was
you're
not
reading people.
Yeah.
Never. It would have been kind of bad.
It'd be like playing blackjack.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't, you know, have a tournament blackjack. Like, there's too much luck involved in blackjack, and too much luck involved in Baccarat.
Yeah, definitely. Poker is a game that naturally lends itself to defining characteristics in people, and I think that was an incredibly wise choice for them to switch to that.
Definitely.
I completely agree with everything you said about, like, how it, like, I love the reboot. I love the fact that, like, he's a new Bond. He's completely different from all the other ones. And it is a breath of fresh air. My biggest argument is how long it takes him to transition. Like, how much time are you going to give him? Like, I feel like the first half of the movie should have been, like, him kind of stumbling, and then the second half of the movie should have been him finding his footing a little bit on the new agent that he has.
I feel like he's there. I mean,
only takes place... Okay, we have to remember that Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace cover only a span of maybe 2 or 3 months. Like, the time frame that these two movies cover is so limited in the scope of what Bond franchise is. It just feels like a lot because it's two separate movies. Yeah. But, I mean, Quantum of Solace takes up literally the second the credits roll.
Yeah, it picks up right after
and that. And that movie only, takes place over, a couple weeks at the most, maybe?
I would actually argue his character is very much like James Bond. Like, he's not in the whole movie. Like, let me explain. Like, certainly in the action scenes, they're a lot more, like, rough and tumble, just kind of, like, slugging it out fist fights.
Yeah.
Certainly. But I think that's
they're dirty.
I think that's more just the style of the day. Like, we're more violent now, and that's sort of what we lean towards. But really, it's not like he's, like, a bumbling buffoon. Like, he doesn't walk up to the women and be like, may I fuck you? Like, he is, like, fucking badass. Fucks that chick, wins a dude's car at a poker game.
But
fucking James Bond. Like,
yeah, I guess, but, like, he's, like, his slickness and slyness and badassery is, like, based on, like, pain and, like, hurt and just being just boned over, basically.
And
I don't like that. I don't like, if you're gonna give him a background and give him something to work towards, like, show him how he becomes Bond, you're like, that's a huge task. You've got a lot of responsibility on your shoulders, because who knows how long this type of Bond will last. How long do you want your franchise your main character to have his main drive and his main emotion behind everything that he does be something based on pain and hurt and revenge.
Well, yeah, you know? I think a lot of that has to do with, and we'll get to Quantum of Solace, but Quantum of Solace is not one of my favorite ones. Like, I don't hold that as like, oh man.
No, I don't.
Like, and to me, I agree, like, the Vesper Lynn story sort of goes for two movies.
Yeah.
And I could see how that sort of drags out and he's like obsessed with it. But to me, it's like this movie standing alone on its own.
Yeah.
I think it works perfectly.
It's my,
fine.
Yeah, honestly, it's my second favorite Bond movie.
As a movie on its own, yes, it's good. I just don't like, minus the character flaws that I see with what Bond is becoming, as a movie, it's great. The whole like parkour thing in the beginning.
Oh, yeah,
is
we
cool.
Should talk about the action.
Like, that shit it is amazing.
It's all the action. I think it's the best action in any of the Bond movies ever.
I don't know.
I think that
I'd have to think
from when he
one.
Starts chasing that guy,
yeah,
to when he busts in, like, parkours all over the world and then busts into the embassy, shoots the place up to shit.
That's pretty.
And then blows the guy away and like fucking throws like blows them all up and just walks out like a pimp. I think it might be the best thing I've ever. Like when I was in the theater the first time and I saw that, I've seen so many Bond movies. Mm-hmm. And my jaw hit the floor. Like, I was like, this is amazing.
As cool as I think the parkour stuff is, I think it's just overdone. I think everyone does the parkour. And maybe that
How
was the first.
How can you overdo
they
awesome?
Did it great.
No, they did a really, great job. But as cool as that guy's parkour was, you know, obviously, like, you know, Bond is like this, could keep up with him. You know, yeah. So.
But see, I think.
But see, Bond was following. He was, like, the thing about, like, that chase, that the reason I like it so much is that guy, he was trying to find where he was going to go. Like, how am I going to get away from this guy? And that's why I like it, is because he was thinking up his exit plan, like, as he was doing it. Like, how the fuck am I going to get away from Bond? There's a crane over there. I guess I'll climb onto it, maybe. Where Bond was like, I'm not as good at parkour, but all I have to do is follow this douchebag.
And he does it in his own way, which I think it's not like Bond all of a sudden was like parkour specialist.
No.
Yeah,
it was a great tete-a-tete. Like the guy does something crazy and then Bond will do this kind of
like he does some like slick, like swishy move and then Bond just runs through the drywall. And for this being the long, is it the longest Bond movie or the second longest?
Majesty's Secret Service is
okay,
the longest.
So
but it's up there.
But
it feels
the longest. It goes for
longest. We're literally like 50 something hours into this marathon and Casino Royale went by like a breeze.
Honestly.
And I woke the fuck up.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that we're like 50 hours deep and that movie, I started it and the end credits were rolling. I'm like, what happened?
Well, because it's just such a solid movie.
It's just so solid.
Like, everyone who made Die Another Day must have seen that movie and just like bowed their heads in shame.
Yeah, I think Martin Campbell definitely just deserves so much credit for coming into the franchise at two completely separate eras. Two completely separate ideas of what Bond should be, definitely. And made both of them to the best of their ability.
Both of those movies were totally tailored.
He got it. He read the script. He got the concepts, and he said, "Okay, I get it. I get what you're trying to do." And then he did it. He filmed it. But also, you know, the audiences are more mature. We kind of covered that we want something a little bit more out of a Bond movie. Whether Patrick compares it to the Bourne movies.
To address that a bit, like, I think it is a fairly unfair comparison.
The first Bourne movie was a remake of The Bourne Identity.
Yeah.
And
it had been a story before.
Yeah, it had been a story before, and it was made more action-packed because audiences want more action-packed movies. It was the same thing with James Bond.
Yeah, and I don't think Bond needs to shy away from action.
No, exactly.
But it is. It is the action franchise.
And so, you know, today's action movies have stuff like parkour, and the things that are popular right now are Texas Hold'em,
But there are, it's respectable to the times.
Yeah,
yeah,
and
exactly. It
couldn't have been integrated more like coherently. I mean, it's not like you're watching. I mean, I remember watching. Although this is, I know, a silly example, we were watching Paul Blart Mall Cop. And then all of a sudden, the villains, there's like a 20-minute parkour chase through the mall. You're like, that makes no sense. There's no context.
Die Hard 4 had parkour sequences.
Yeah. Like, this movie integrated it so seamlessly. It didn't feel like it was they were trying.
To me, I think Casino Royale, why it sticks out so much in my mind is one of the best ones, is not only is it a great action movie, probably one of the better action movies in a long while.
Definitely.
I actually think, like, it holds its own as just a good, like, movie. Yeah. Like, they
it does stand alone.
They take Bond to this level where, like, they go past sort of the stock kind of cliche Bond and really give him, like, an emotional story, which I know said they get sort of tied up in as it goes on. But
that's a good thing.
But which I think is funny, like, because he, even though it's one of the more emotional stories, that Craig is one of the least emotional Bonds.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it's an interesting dynamic. Some people have criticized the films for that, but I don't know. I'm excited to see where it leads.
Well, that just leads into the argument of, is he just unable to, like, portray the emotions? Like, did they want him to be, like, emotional, and he just can't do it?
No, Craig has, like, range. I've seen Craig in a lot of movies. Did you not feel for him at all when he watches his Vesper?
Yeah,
commit suicide? I think Craig's acting more than was sufficient.
Yeah, Bond learns a very important lesson, you know, for just getting his 00. Mm-hmm. You know, this is his first real assignment. He's dealing with a lot of people and trying to be, you know, a cool customer. He's flirting with the girl, you know, trying to use his charm, which she seems resistant to, you know, until she gets, like, in a scuffle and she needs, like, you know, comfort. They get together and then she betrays him. And part of that emotional scarring is really not knowing why, which I think is that really great lead-in into the next movie, because it just ends with this, uh-oh, there's more. No Bond movie has ever ended with a direct sequel in mind.
Like, that's a to-be continued. Like,
they do always end with, you know, James Bond will return in, you know, Goldfinger. But, you know, they're not saying that Goldfinger was a direct sequel to From Russia with Love.
Right. It's each movie up to this point has kind of, been, like, its own entity. Whereas
it's like serialized versus episodic.
But, like, interestingly enough, I actually think Casino Royale, like, had they, say, like, maybe closed the books on that and not pursued it any further, I don't think they would have left me hanging to the point where I felt cheated or, like, the story was not over.
It was just enough of a cliffhanger to be like, okay.
Well, I mean, I really embrace the idea of that this is Bond coming into himself and that he got, like, so burned by this woman. Because it is admittedly a little jarring to see Bond so emotional over a woman. I mean, I know he, like, married that chicken.
Yeah.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service, but it was, like, on a fucking bet from her dad and stuff. Like,
we've
seen Bond fall in, like, love, sort of, through the movies. But this was the first one where I, like, 100% was like, I could really see that he actually genuinely loved this woman.
Yeah. And it's a perfect setup for leading to what Bond becomes as we know him. I mean, like, what a better way to justify, I mean, it's not to say it's okay, but that to see the emotional arc from going from, I love this person, to I can't trust people anymore, to leading to the Bond that we know as the womanizer.
Well, in the end of the movie, when he's like, the bitch is dead, you're just like, whoa. Yeah. Like, and you totally see how he becomes,
I mean, how much more can you justify that frame of mind? I don't think, I mean, how much more do you need?
But see, that's another thing, too, is like, I wish they kind of explored more of, like, showed him hurt more. I didn't feel his emotion as much as I think you guys did.
Oh, man, I didn't.
I feel like the arch for him is too long for such a short span of movies. Whereas, like, in the first movie, I feel like they should have shown more of the facade. Like, maybe killed her sooner and, like, had a longer ending.
Well, I almost feel like they're in this weird zone where I don't think it's meant to be, like, he's going to become Sean Connery.
No, I don't think
I agree.
I don't think, in, like, spiritually, it's like, oh, this is pre-Bond, but, like, I don't think we're meant to think he's going to be the same person.
No, I don't think this is saying,
like, that, I think it has its own thing.
Well, no, I don't think any Bond was specifically trying to be any other Bond portrayed by a different actor. But all of these people represent the spirit of the character in some form or another. This was the first one that really decided we're going to steer course away from what people know as that, you know, the spirit of Bond, and then we're going to lead it back to the spirit. We're going to let you see how that spirit became him, and it is his own path. This was a long-term project. You know, I mean, like, it's like talking about Fellowship of the Ring, and then, you know, before the final movie comes out saying, oh, yeah, but where did that lead? It's like, no, the story's not done yet. And that's why I actually left him out of judgment for whether he was not my favorite Bond or not.
Right, because you want to see how it goes.
This story isn't done.
But I think it's also amazing that the entire movie, you don't hear the Bond theme ever. Mm-hmm. until like the very end of the movie, and that's a moment where like I would remember being in the theater, and once you started to hear that Bond theme like rev up, and he just sniped the guy, and you were like, "Oh shit!" Like, and then that is the most like of all the badass moments in Bond ever. When he and then when he looks and he's like Bond, James Bond, and you're just like, "Wow!" Like, so
the,
cool.
The lack of that song. Definitely made it coming back that much sweeter.
When you
sweeter.
Finally hear it, you're like, oh my God.
You're like, oh, I missed
here we
you.
Are, yeah.
Which leads into, I think anyway, the theme song for this movie, which they went really, tried to be clever, and I think they pulled off. Some people can't stand it, but the title of the damn song is You Know My Name.
Yeah. I love the song.
And the whole point is
great. Yeah, I think it's a good Bond song.
Yeah, I like it.
And I think the opening animation
is really cool.
Really good.
Yeah.
Because I like that it's sort of harkening back to those old, like, titles. So it kind of has a feeling of an old Bond title, but at the same time, it's very different, and it's sort of a new style.
Yeah.
It may really be my favorite Bond, like, opening title sequence, just because it's got such an... A clever,
all the gambling
appropriate
stuff,
like. Way, like the spades, like shooting out of the gun, and like it's just very, very well done, and I just loved it. Like I think it was really great, and the song was good too. The song was great.
The opening scene where he fucking blows that guy away in the office, like it's all black and white.
Yeah,
and there's like then the he flashbacks. Kills a dude in the fucking like Bamba. Thing, and then it goes to the barrel, and so like, oh my god.
Yeah, he drowns him in the sink, and then, like...
It's such a perfect blend of, like, totally fresh and new, and then also, like, totally old school.
That whole scene where he's in the office and talking to the guy is very reminiscent of Dr. No, when he gets to jump on that guy in the girl's apartment. When the guy comes in and shoots him in the bed, and he comes in and
he's... Badger 6, kabang,
and he's sitting there, and they're having a conversation... Because in Dr. No, Sean Connery just is done with the conversation and kills him. It's not like... He gets in any useful information out of him. He's just like, I'm just done with you.
Yeah.
Boom. And that's exactly what the guy's like.
Totally.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the second one's always, considerably.
Yeah, like anyone who argues that Daniel Craig is not a cool Bond, like, Jesus God. Like, that scene, he's like, he doesn't even let the guy finish.
Yeah, anyone who wants to say that kind of fucking cool off against Daniel Craig, I guarantee Craig's winning.
He smoked that guy like a... Billy Bond, man, he was so good.
Fucking double taken here, Eddie Griffin.
And
let us not forget, as far as the badass scale, the fucking torture scene with Le Chiffre. Anybody that can take a fucking stone to the nuts and he's laughing.
He's like a little bit to the left.
He looks cool, naked and tied up on a fucking wicker chair, getting like his balls beaten.
Yeah, and Le Chiffre's all, you know, you've taken good care of your body. What a waste. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, because he can't do anything. Yeah.
Like,
he's totally...
I got an itch? Like, like taunting Jesus him to hit. Oh, man. Oh, we should talk about the guy that plays Le Chiffre. Like, I thought it was a really good villain.
Yeah.
Crying blood.
That's what I loved. It was like this, while the movie's very fresh and new, like, that villain could not have been more, like, old school.
Yeah.
Like, fucking cries blood and has, like, an eye thing and, like, just such an old Bond villain.
What
like.
Is up with your got two double take references in, like, 2 minutes. It's awesome.
Oh, and Vesper Lynn. What's her name? Eva Green?
Eva Green.
Some people might disagree. I think she is, like, stunning.
I think there's a resounding amongst, like, at least... like the Bond fans or people who've seen that movie that say she's like one of the hottest ever.
It's unbelievable.
I guess I see it. She doesn't rank that high for me, but I get it.
Like she's really
rent
pretty.
The Dreamers and then come back to me.
All right. All right.
I haven't seen
you will not be disappointed. Long last.
Final movie.
Final Bond movie that we are going to talk about and that has been made. Quantum of Solace. A very normal name. non-confusing name. Quantum of Solace.
It means a smidge of sadness. Just a little
comfort.
Bit of sadness.
No, no.
Oh, comfort,
comfort.
I mean.
Comfort.
A little bit of comfort.
A little bit of comfort. Which is great.
Well, if the... So the organization...
That makes it feel good.
The like, Spectre...
It's just a little teddy bear.
I would like a little bit of comfort.
So would James Bond.
So the Spectre-like organization is called Quantum, right? Yeah. So that kind of makes it make some more sense.
Mm-hmm. And it's an actual... title from what? From a Fleming short story?
I think it's like a line.
Yeah.
Or a line of
dialogue.
Yeah,
it's a line from one of the one of the Eamon Fleming stories.
Quantum of Solace.
So it's not total bullshit. It's not they pulled it out. I was like, oh, what sounds like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull? Like, it wasn't like totally out of nowhere.
Attack of the Clones!
But,
no. As far as titles go, like, totally.
It's
not that bad, but.
It comes off the tongue nicely.
It sounds very Bondy.
Yeah, that sounds.
You know where it looks awesome? Is with the O of and the O of Solace
the
and then the seven.
Yeah.
So.
That's cool.
I'm
so
sorry.
Does Casino Royale as well. Both titles, you know, have O's,
the O's.
And they stagger them to remind you, hey, it's a James Bond movie.
So. I think Quantum of Solace is one of those things where it's not a bad movie, but it's sort of, in my mind, it's in that, at least for me personally, it's in that Tomorrow Never Dies zone of like, it's not bad, but it's following like this unbelievable movie.
It starts off amazing.
Yeah.
That car chase.
That car chase is badass.
Okay. No, yeah.
That car chase is out of control. That's an amazing car chase.
Yeah. Of all the action in the movie, that's the best part, but I actually sort of have an axe to grind with just the action in the movie in general. It's so unfair to have, because every time I've seen this movie, I've seen Casino Royale
right before.
I've only seen this movie twice.
Me too.
I went the day it opened, I watched Casino Royale, and then I saw it. And then obviously in this marathon, I've seen every Bond movie ever, and then I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's such an unfair comparison, because it most certainly does not live up to the action of Casino Royale.
Yeah.
But I actually think it's very oddly, like, I get that they're going real artsy with it, and they got like Mike Newell as the director. He did like Finding Neverland or whatever. So I get that they're going like, oh, this is an emotional Bond, and we're continuing the Vesper story, and it's like we're going places with him. But action wise, like
the plane, like sequence,
yeah,
doesn't
and
work
even the
very
one
well.
You're like Jackson, the one you really like, the rope scene.
Yeah,
I actually think is edited like.
Really
terribly.
It was
terribly.
It is edited, like there are a lot of cuts and stuff, but like I don't know, like that's kind of the thing, one of the things I like. Like I like the fact that it's kind of like quick and you all know what's going on, because I feel like it puts you in the moment. Like if I were fighting fucking James Bond like on ropes and shit like that, it'd be like chaos. I'd be like, oh shit, I'm just gonna shoot everywhere and hope I kill this guy.
It's interesting, like the two movies really show the two camps of like action scenes.
Yeah.
Like Casino Royale is these, like, especially with that parkour stuff, like there's these big wide shots.
Mm-hmm.
They hold on takes for a really long time.
That's true.
And you really
absolutely
get to see everything and you're really into it. So I think that's just more like
it does,
my style.
It is juxtaposed.
And so in this movie it's like I get so confused, like it's
well, I think in
thousand shots.
Well, I think that scene is very edited, but there's a lot of really good action scenes in this movie. There's the boat chase.
The boat chase is really good. Shot of the motorcycle jumping, like Daniel Craig is riding a motorcycle, ramps over onto a boat, and somehow the camera is fixed to that cycle, is one of the coolest action shots I've ever seen.
Yeah,
Like it's funny, this movie is filled with moments.
Yeah.
It's peaks and valleys that ultimately sort of add up to a neutral.
Which is very appropriate to the title. It's filled with a bunch of Quantum of Solaces.
Yeah. It's like, it's, I don't know, I think what, like you were saying, as far as action is concerned, that there are two camps. Like, I think this movie suffered a little too much, especially during the rope gunfight of the, what I call the Paul Greengrass effect, where it's like, instead of taking the time to choreograph something that's like beautiful and makes sense and like works for the characters, they say we'll just confuse the audience spatially and something is lost, like being able to see it. which is funny because it's a movie, and I don't know, it's
I felt the rope fight was very exciting. I'm sorry,
it is exciting, but I mean I think it is a case of personal preference.
I don't think it's that exciting.
It's just
fucking confusing.
It is
really confusing. Appropriate because I don't know, it's like I said, it's just a mess. It's just chaotic, and yes, it's like I can understand where you guys are coming from, but yeah, I think I agree.
And that hold on that last shot where he...
That's the only part of it. That is cool.
Like,
I will not deny when his kill shot is pretty good.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's arguing that it's bad, that any of these action sequences are bad, But there's just something left to be desired in some cases.
There's one that I would flat out call bad. And it's actually, it's so weird. It's a good way to explain the movie because my favorite scene in the movie is then followed by my least favorite scene in the movie. And they're both at the opera. Like, he goes to this opera, right? And there's this unbelievably awesome part where he's like listening in on quantum, like, and they have this crazy, like, they're like having a conference call in an opera with, like, they're all mic'd up and like such a cool way to try to like hide yourself, and Bond's like privy to the whole thing, and then he like a fucking badass is just like like gets in on the call and it's like, what are y'all doing out here?
Yeah, you need to find a better place to have these meetings.
And then like a bunch of idiots, they all like stand up and he takes photos of all of them. It's like so cool, such a great idea. Like, love the scene. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And, but, and Mr. White was the only one smart enough to
sit still. Yeah,
they sit still and like we're not falling for the shit. But then immediately after that is, in quotes, an action scene where I get like, it could be amazing that like Bond has to break out of like an opera house with a bunch of dudes coming to get him.
Mm-hmm.
Any Bond movie, you're like, oh, here we fucking go. Like, roll up your sleeves.
Yeah.
Time for some ass kicking. In all honesty, it's done really, really poorly. Like, first of all, they cut out all the sound. All you hear is, like, the opera playing. Which is like, okay, great. Like, yeah, you saw Road to Perdition 2. Like, you're real artsy, whatever. Like, I like it in that movie because it's done well. But in this, it's fucking confusing. And then it's, like, close-up gunshot back to opera. Suddenly, Bond's running down a hallway, I think, like, back to opera, then, like, a close-up of guys running, and then all of a sudden, Bond's, like, outside.
Which was a technique they had already decided to use in this movie as far as, like, creating drama with an action with the whole horse chase.
Yeah.
During
but
the
But both those scenes, I think, are not action scenes. Like, they're both fucking boring. Like,
First thing, like, using that technique that I can think of is Saving Private Ryan, like, how Tom Hanks' character would, like, all of the sound would go off, and, like, you hear whatever.
Yeah, but
you
see,
hear, like...
But like, I'm okay with it there, because like, he gets hit with a bomb.
Yeah.
And it's, like, a practical, like...
It's motivated
You're connected to him because of it, and then this movie's like, I feel like you're disconnected.
Yeah, but, like, that's the main reason that I can, like, justify them wanting to do it there is to show, like, how slick and, like, sly and, like, he can be at, like, kicking all these guys' asses and, like, just doing it, like, under the cover of
but
the
like,
sound. But, like...
Did we see him kick anyone's ass?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, it's too many quick cuts. It's, like, that is a perfect time. Like, if you want to do that, if you want to take the sound out and just have it be opera, cool, do it. But make it, like, one shot, like, no cuts of just, like, him perfectly choreographed, kicking everybody's asses, but still
like
kind of
sloppy.
Like, kick-ass
style,
new.
Like...
Yeah,
they're,
exactly.
Like, the thing I think, like you said with Saving Private Ryan, like, it's motivated by something that happens to the character. This cross-cutting with the horses and the cross-cutting with the opera, although he's in these locations, I guess that's the motivating force.
It's the environment that's around him.
Yeah, they don't inspire anything about what's actually happening with the action. It's just like, okay, well, this is, I guess, happening next door. It's like cutting into, like, somebody eating dinner. It's like, well, yeah, maybe they're a door over, but who cares? Like, it doesn't support anything that's going on.
My whole take on it is that it's a guy that doesn't direct action movies.
Right.
Yeah.
His take on an action scene.
That was just going to say something to that effect, that it just seems like he's trying to put his own stamp on it, and while it may not fit with the scene, he... makes it fit because that's what he wants.
To me, I think the other sort of detriment to the movie is, to me, the villains are sort of bad. The main villain is kind of okay, like the creepy French guy. But his fucking, like, sidekick with his horrible haircut is like, that guy's a joke. Like, what kind of fucking back? Like, give me an odd
villains
job or somebody.
Be, yeah, villains
like,
need to be somewhat scary.
Yeah, at least go with the generic, like, dye his hair blonde and make him, like, invulnerable to pain or something. Like, this guy just walks around looking like a fucking just idiot.
But to me, I think that it's going back again to the whole Spectre aspect. Where all the people who were working with Spectre, like Largo had an eye patch. Other than that, he was not a threatening individual. And this Gordon Green guy, he's weaselly, he has people killed, but he's a low-level quantum loser.
Well, I think, weirdly enough, like, Gordon Green isn't my... He passes with me. I get really caught up on the guy he's working with. with the bad haircut, who looks like he's on a season of Project Runway or something. Like, what the fuck is he doing in a Bond movie? This is the weird shit that I get hung up on. Like, when I was in the theater, every scene he was in, I couldn't even concentrate because I was just filled with rage. I'm like, why is this guy in this movie? What purpose did he serve? He didn't do anything. Like, anyway, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
It just drives me crazy.
Are you okay? Are you doing all
right? I guess. I guess. At least give him a scar or something. Like,
yeah, I don't know. Like, I know, like, Pat O'Reilly had mentioned to me before that he thought the whole idea, like, the whole threat of this movie, doubling the price of water in Bolivia, was just, like, although it does, it would suck for the Bolivian population, it's kind of one of those, like, yeah, do you really need to put Bond on that mission? Like, there's probably some other people that could take care of the price of water in Bolivia.
But he is a new agent.
True, but it just felt so, like...
Well, it's more like he stumbles upon it, right?
Well, he stumbles. The topic of is a sore spot with me that people focus on this part. It's
a real story, right?
Yeah, this is part of Quantum. This is same as Spectre. Spectre had their hands in many pies. Spectre, you know, is in control of all kinds of things, but we don't get to see all that at once because that would be overload, information overload. This is Quantum. He stumbled onto this one thing that Quantum was working on, and where it may seemingly be small, that they're gaining control of Bolivia. But they are gaining control of an entire country. Yeah. Not a huge country. I guess we would call it a third world, or maybe a second world country. Mm-hmm. If they're worried about getting a second world country, they're probably already have people, because they already have. You can see that they already had a person in the prime minister's office. Mm-hmm. One of the people they took a picture of, and it says, when they brought it up on the screen, it says, secretary to the prime minister. It's like, fuck, they already got someone in England, and they already are, they're working the CIA. I mean, they already have all the big places down. So I think that it is a big deal. And I think that taking that down and ruining that plan pisses Quantum off.
Yeah.
And it's just the beginning. Yeah. This is just the beginning. Yeah. This movie suffers from being the middle child of a third child that may never come or will come too late from now. It's Lord of the Rings, it's Fellowship, Two Towers, and sorry, we're done.
Yeah,
I mean, people would be pissed.
Yeah,
it doesn't stand alone well. Like, Two Towers stands alone well as a movie,
no.
But you come into it late and you end before its end.
Yeah,
so you are confused. If you just watched the Two Towers, you would be somewhat confused.
Yeah.
Quantum, I like it. I don't love it. I like it. I think it fits with this continuing of a story.
Yes,
and they wrap up the Vesper thing, which is great. You know, he can end it with on a thought of, she did care about me, and I got who was responsible for her death.
Relating to, like, the women in this movie, that like, Olga Kurylenko, number two, hottest ever. Like, I had seen her, saw the movie the first time, I was like, yeah, Olga's pretty attractive. And then I saw her this time, I'm like, you know what, she is really, really attractive. I'm like...
Wait, is she the main girl?
Yeah,
or the
I'll
agree, like, when we were about to start, I was like, yeah, she's okay, I don't get... And then, yeah. She's pretty.
She definitely grew on me. I don't know if I'd give her number two, but she's really pretty.
If Domino and Thunderball wasn't around, there's no doubt in my mind Olga would be number one. I don't know, she's just really attracted to me. And then Gemma Arterton as Strawberry Fields was a great secondary Bond character. And her throwback, you know, to being, like, the covered in oil. Like, being covered in gold or whatever was great. It was, you know.
And the woman has a pretty good story about, like, I mean, it's kind of stock at this point, but, like, she's out for revenge.
Yeah, she's out. She's got
this guy, and, like...
And the fact that she has this, like, sort of pyromania fear, or, you know, like, you know, this fear of fire, which, you know, it's...
There's pyrophobia.
Sort of,
it's a justifiable fear.
Yeah, I mean, it's justified, and I think
there was a lot of fire at the end.
Yeah, that's a lot of fire.
Yeah, and I thought that was cool that, you know, I mean, it's sort of an obvious choice, but, you know, it puts her into this context of being, like, we've seen her in this movie, and she's strong. She's one of the stronger Bond, you know, girls.
Well, she's a Secret Service agent.
Yeah. And the fact that she's one of the few, like, good Bond girls in the entire movie franchise that Bond never beds with.
Yeah,
I mean, that's something to be said. I mean, like she's a really strong Bond girl female character in this franchise who ultimately, like, is relatable but still vulnerable without being weak. And you care for her and you see what she's struggling with, but you never feel like she's weak or needs, you know, like, just... She's her own character, and I don't know. I think she's one of my favorites. I think she's a great character.
She's a very good character.
Anything else about Quantum of Solace, guys?
Yeah, one last thing. We skipped over from Casino Royale with Jeffrey Wright being brought on as Felix Leiter.
Yeah, he's awesome.
My favorite Felix Leiter.
Yeah, me too.
Easily.
He's pretty awesome.
I like him as an actor. Like, yeah. I think he's a great actor, and he's awesome. Like, yeah, I agree, John. Like, I think he might be my favorite Felix. Like, he's just, he's very calm.
Well, first Felix to make it into two movies.
Yeah.
That's a feat that's in of itself.
There have been some good ones. But
he represents America well, too.
Yeah.
Can we say that? Yeah. Like, in a lot of these movies, Americans are like, derp, derp, you know, like, look at, like, J.W. Pepper.
I actually love how in Quantum of Solace, America's doing some really sketchy, nasty shit. Like, we don't look cool at all.
Yeah, well,
he's just sitting there eating shit and being like, this fucking sucks. Like,
yeah.
Well, because, like, the whole plot there is that, Gordon Green promised the Americans oil from their Bolivian takeover. So they're helping to take over Bolivia, but there is no oil.
They're waiting for the oil.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, they're being used. And
that's the other bonus of the movie. He gets, like, promoted, right?
Yeah,
like,
Felix, he says all the right people keep their jobs.
Yeah. That's great.
I look forward to see more of Stephen Wright as Felix. Yeah. Whereas the other Felixes, when one disappeared and was God's like, well, moving on, like, all who cares? Right.
I'm fine with him being the next, like, having, like, a Q run. Like, just staying with it.
Totally.
Like,
I'm fine with that'd be cool.
Do you think he sees sharks and is like, oh, shit, I'm getting out of here. Like, I know what happens. Like,
he limps off.
Well, no, I'm never getting married. Like,
well, Jackson brought up a very interesting point. There's no Q.
Thank you.
There's no Q in these movies.
There's no Q yet.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
And does have a personal assistant walking around with
him. Yeah. But there's no real
Money Penny, right?
There's no Money Penny, and there's no real gadgets. Like, his car had, like, some stuff in it, some emergency equipment, but, I mean, it wasn't, like, disguised. Like, it wasn't, like, hidden in his shoe, and he did all this crazy stuff to get it to work. It was just in the glove compartment.
The only one in the Daniel Craig movies is the defibrillator, which is clearly a defensive
tool,
which is, like, a safety, like, you're gonna need this, because you're new.
You're probably gonna get killed, or nearly.
So, hopefully you've got some chick around that knows how to save your life, so.
How good is that when he's like, that last hand nearly killed me? He almost dies like 20 times. I would never get up for that poker table.
They tell me he needs to go to a hospital, is all, right after I finish this game.
Guys. We did it. End of podcast, man.
Yeah, well done.
For the one of you that's still listening, well, welcome to the end.
And that was.
And you need to check yourself into a mental clinic.
Of course. Well, it's been really fun talking about Bond with you guys, and I have to thank all of you very much for
thanks for being a part of it.
Yeah, thank you to everybody for being able to be this big of a nerd. My pleasure.
Yes, there are more marathons to come, though none quite this lengthy. I think we've climbed to Everest, and next time we'll hit, you know, just a nice light jog. Like,
I think
like a three.
I think as far as franchises, I think we hit the pinnacle. I don't think there's any franchise that continues that far, but we may have some themed marathons maybe in the future that are lengthy.
Yeah,
but,
or TV. But we'll see what the next marathon will be, and we'll post it soon. And thank you for listening, and have a good evening.
Bye.
Thanks a lot.
Adios.